From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the ninth day of January 2014. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker at CGB Enterprises. He's in Mandeville, Louisiana. Your director of ag programming, Dave Dickey, will be here with today's agricultural news. We'll discuss the cash grain markets with TGM's Matt Bennett. And as we finish out our program together, we'll talk about the weather forecast with T-Storm's Mike Tenora in Chicago, Illinois. And it all happens right here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. For over 96 years, generations of farmers have turned to Farm Credit for their financial needs. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit offers products and service geared specifically to the agricultural community.
Checking now the numbers as they finished up in Chicago for this Thursday afternoon. Nearby March wheat at $5.84 and a quarter, down 4 and a half. For the soft red, May at $5.89 and a half, down a nickel. And July 4 and a quarter lower at $5.94 and a quarter. The hard red July at $6.33, down a penny and 3 quarters. March corn for the day at $4.12, down a nickel. May futures down 5 cents at $4.20 and a quarter. July settled $4.27 and 3 quarters into corn pit, 4 and 3 quarters lower. In September at $4.34 and a quarter, down 4 and 3 quarters. December corn, $4.41 and a quarter, down 4 and 3 quarters as well. March 2015 at $4.51 and a quarter, down 4 and a half cents. January beans at $12.96 and a quarter, down 4 and a half. The March futures were up 4 and a half at $12.73 and three quarters. May soybeans at $12.55, up 4 and a half. July at $12.40 and a half, up 3 and a half cents. And the August contract at $12.04 and a half cents, down a half. November beans of next year at $11 and a penny, down 3 cents for the day. Bean meal at $4.33, up $2.40. Bean oil at $37.74. That finished 31 cents higher. Live cattle futures in the February contract at $136.55, up 2.5 cents. April at $138.87.5. Down a dime, and June live cattle at $130.12.5, up 17.5. January Peters at $169.15, up 67.5. The March at $168.82.5, 27.5 cents higher, and April contract for the feeder cattle at $169.62.5, up 45 cents. Lean hogs finished February at $85.25 per 100 pounds, down 32.5. April futures at $90.72.5. down 37 and a half cents. You, of course, are listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. It comes to you from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. You can find us online at willhe.org. That's willag.org. Here's what the outside markets look like. At this hour, crude oil futures trading the February at $92.13 a barrel, down 21 cents. February RBOB gasoline, or the wholesale price, at $2.64.6. That's down 9 tenths of a cent. Ethanol futures at $1.93. Our penny and 7 tenths higher, and the difference between the two, or the spread, is 71 and 6 tenths of a cent wide. That's 2 and 6 tenths of a cent narrower than it was yesterday afternoon. Natural gas at $4 a penny and 8 tenths, 19 and 8 tenths of a cent lower. Diesel fuel at $2.92 and 6 tenths, down 2 and 3 tenths. Gold futures at $1,229.40 an ounce, $3.90 higher on the day. And the U.S. dollar at 81.00 is down 0.01 for the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the National Weather Service. They have issued a special weather statement for scattered slick spots expected in the area. Through early Friday morning, light snow will continue to fall through early afternoon, says the National Weather Service, for the Urbana-Champaign area, with the total snow accumulation remaining well under an inch. After the snow comes to an end, patchy freezing drizzle will develop late this afternoon. That'll continue through tonight, while ice accumulations are expected to be very minimal. Scattered slick spots will develop on many area roadways, some sidewalks. Motorists, of course, are advised to drive with caution during the evening commute. Please slow down and allow some extra time to arrive at your destination. The weather forecast shows us that this evening we should have snow through about 3 p.m., then a chance of freezing rain, as we said already, cloudy and 28 tonight. Tomorrow, a slight chance of rain, freezing rain before noon, then rain, a high of 40 degrees tomorrow. Breezy on a south-southeast wind at 10 to 15 miles an hour. That'll increase to 16 to 20 in the mid-afternoon. More on the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour. We'll talk with Mike Tenora at T-Storm Weather in Chicago. You're listening, of course, to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. You can always find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find all of our agricultural programming from the Opening Market Report to the Closing Market Report and everything in between.
Support for WILL Agriculture comes from Murray Wise Associates, LLC. Land auctions, farm management, financial services, and institutional and corporate real estate. Information on upcoming land auctions can be found at murraywiseassociates.com.
Let's check now what's happened in the marketplace. Dan Zwicker at CGB Enterprises is on the phone line from Mandeville, Louisiana. Good afternoon to you, Dan. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, Todd.
Well, tell me a little bit about the marketplace and how you view what's been happening there over the last several days in Chicago. It's been kind of a rough week.
Yeah, it has been, at least for the bull anyway. The bears kind of had it his way the last couple days. From what I understand, whether or not it's correct or not, I understood that farmers had been sellers of some cash corn earlier this week, Monday, Tuesday, and some of the commercial grain crowd basically was holding on to those bushels, leaving them unhedged until betting that a lot of this index fund buying that was supposed to come into the market around January 5th was going to rally the market, and that failed to rally the market. So they came to the table and threw a bunch of hedge pressures into the market yesterday, and then that just climaxed a move on down into fresh contract lows, and then that brought in new technical selling. I mean, you're going to get technical selling when you make fresh contract lows, and the opposite is if you have fresh contract highs. The technicians are just going to come in and buy it. They're just going to put the pedal to the metal. So that collapsed the market there yesterday, and then that showed follow through here today. And I think today it seemed to me like there was a sense of panicness in the marketplace today. And, you know, after we made our lows during that 10 o'clock hour, for the most part, corn and soybeans rallied off those lows the rest of the session and basically, you know, cut those 10-cent losses to roughly a nickel or so. So it did, when you look at your intraday charts, it does look like maybe we did have a climax low in here, and then the market will consolidate tomorrow, might even do some recovery, and then we'll, I guess, put our seatbelts back on for the USA's report at 11 o'clock on Friday, or I guess 11 o'clock on Friday tomorrow.
Yeah,
I guess.
Tomorrow, 11 o'clock. It looks to me like as you look at the weekly charts, at least in the corn, that we could post this one as an outside down or an outside up week.
Well, it could go either way. I mean, these reports, I can't remember quarterly stocks report.
Yeah.
Being neutral. Now,
my memory's not
as good as it used to be, but at least it seems like over the last few years anyway, anytime you got into a major report, there was a surprise one way or the other on it. Well,
I got a question about that. So the grain stocks usually, and sometimes the surprise in the grain stocks report, which is as of December the 1st, is the feed and residual number. There are two things that happen there. They've got to recalculate based on the end of the last year, marketing year, and they also have to calculate what was used at the beginning in the first quarter. So those two things are kind of interesting to happen at the same time. And I guess this time around we've had both a friendly to bullish cattle on feed number and hogs and pigs report, meaning there were fewer animals than many people had expected out there.
Yeah, when you look at the animal consuming units and you look at the overall meat production numbers, we're not necessarily gaining much of a rebuild on feed consumption, at least, you know, if you try to look at feed consumption at that point in view. The thing that I'm not thoroughly convinced, USDA has a complete handle on this year's acreage yet, and maybe this report could show more additional acreage changes, and they may go either way. I'm more in the opinion that we still have smaller acres out there than what USJ is printing on the table, and that may end up maybe we won't get much of an increase in production. I do have to probably agree with the people that think we got a higher yield coming. At least the reports that I heard during harvest would make you believe that there might be room for another bump up in yields. my guess is we're going to have some high residual numbers on both corn and soybeans on this report. And basically a residual number is unexplained disappearance. We'll kind of go from there. But it's going to be kind of hard to, whatever happens, to make corn bullish. I think if the best-case scenario probably on corn would probably be somewhat of a neutral number. And then since the market collapsed so hard here going into the report that it could be a number that was already baked in the cake and the market can't find any new selling. So we recover off of these lows that we put in here and try to have some kind of January recovery rally of some kind. But I until we see the numbers, it's kind of hard to kind of guess on that. Now, soybeans, we're kind of torn between the tight old crop situation and then potentially very large world supplies as the year goes on when South America starts harvesting, and then the U.S. farmer is going to plant more soybeans. But in the near term here, old crop months, I think, are going to find stability or support from China demand, with exports having already exceeded USJ's projection. One would think that any kind of increase in production in soybeans, they would use that to increase their export number. If we don't have an increase in soybean production, then they're going to have to cut carryover down to bare bones, to a rationing type number. And we'll kind of go from there. Now, a lot of people tell us that, you know, we can expect maybe some sales cancellations down the road if the South American crop does turn out to be a record, and if they get their logistics in line and start moving some inventory into the world channels, we may see some cancellations of sales, and that may not be quite as bullish as what it's on surface, at least for right now.
Hey, thanks so much for taking the time with us.
Very well.
That's Dan Zwicker. He's with CGB Enterprises. Joins us from his office in Mandeville, Louisiana.
Agricultural market reports on WILL are made possible with support from Busey. Small business is the next big business. So Busey offers solutions to fit growing business needs, from customizable lending options to succession planning. Busey, your dream, our promise.
Have you signed up yet for Voices of Illinois Agriculture? Just a few more days left to register. You can do that online at willag.org. Just hit the Voices of Illinois Agriculture links that are on the front page there. Or you can call us here at the radio station, 217-333-7300. Voices of Illinois Agriculture, it's a signature event. Now here's Dave Dickey with today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, a study by Informa Economics says that there was no correlation between an increase in the cost of renewable identification numbers and retail gasoline prices in 2013. The results of the study show that 2013 D6 renewable fuel RINs, satisfied primarily with corn-based ethanol, peaked in price at $1.46 on July 18th. Average retail gasoline peaked at $3.78 on February 28th. Informa Senior Vice President Scott Richmond says that it cannot be concluded that changes in RIN prices cause changes in retail gasoline prices. The study says that gasoline prices increased because of the price of crude oil, as well as the number of vehicle miles driven throughout the year. RINs are the credits used to show compliance with the renewable fuel standards submitted by obligated parties, including refiners, blenders, and importers, to the Environmental Protection Agency. CONAB, Brazil's government crop supply agency, today forecast a record 2013-14 soybean harvest at 90.33 million tons. That's up from 90.03 million tons predicted in December. CONAB estimated a 2013-14 corn crop of 78.97 million tons compared with 78.78 million tons forecast last month. Cargill Incorporated's second quarter profit climbed by more than a third as plentiful grain harvests in the U.S. and elsewhere eased costs for its meatpacking and animal feed businesses. Earnings rose to $556 million for its fiscal second quarter, which ended on November 30th. Cargill's revenues fell 7%, however, to $32.9 billion. Cargill's food ingredients division, which includes oils, flour, and cocoa, delivered the largest portion of profits in the quarter as demand rose for cocoa powder, and the huge U.S. corn crop helped boost demand for ethanol, which Cargill also produces. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. That second program will air just after this program tomorrow on our home station, up on the website by about 4 o'clock. Our guest tomorrow on USDA Report Day will be Daryl Good, ag economist from the U of I. In fact, Daryl will be our guest the evening of January the 24th as well. For our Voices of Illinois Agriculture event, not only will Daryl be there, but Gary Schnitke will be along too. He'll take up crop insurance. Daryl will wrap up the commodity markets after we hear Steve Freed, Pete Manhart, Wayne Nelson, and Jackie Vakes talk about the marketplace. But our special guest for the evening, our special guest is Bob Easter, the president of the University of Illinois. He's an animal scientist, has made many trips to China. I've traveled a couple of times with him across the planet. He has some great insights about the future of land-grant institutions. I believe he will share some of those with us. The evening of our Voices of Illinois Agriculture event, registration for the event closes the 15th day of this month, so not very far away. If you have not registered yet, a couple of ways to do it. You can visit our website at willag.org, look for Voices of Illinois Agriculture, just click on anything there and you'll be taken to the registration website, or you can call this number, 217-333-9355. It's $100 a ticket. Just ask about Voices of Illinois Agriculture. Again, the phone number to call, 217-333-9355. Now up next, you know there are more than 77 million acres of soybeans in the United States, or at least there have been in the past. Very few of these beans, however, will be consumed right out of the pod. But as you'll hear, there is a push to grow more varieties suitable for vegetable crop production. We're all familiar with fields of soybeans, even if we don't recognize the crop. It's grown and harvested in the Mississippi River Valley from New Orleans to Minnesota. And the soybean pods hang brown and fuzzy, just waiting for the farmer to combine them. But what if we took just a few of those 77 million acres and harvested the pods while they were still green? That's when we call it edamame, says University of Illinois researcher Marty Williams.
Immature soybeans, yes, vegetable soybeans, also known as edamame, basically soybean, a certain special types of cultivars that have been selected for fresh eating or lightly processed where they're harvested at the full seed stage. And they're still green long before the plant starts to senesce, which we you know, would be the traditional soybeans.
A soybean breeder at Illinois saw the potential to make good-tasting vegetable crop soybeans, and Dick Bernard did. It's just now that vegetable processors in the United States are seeing enough local demand to think about contracting a few acres to be harvested. And Illinois is again involved, this time doing wheat science research.
Work we're doing here is looking at crop tolerance to a few of the herbicides that the growers and processors would like to have available. But then we're also doing work on weed management systems, where it's not just relying on herbicides, but a number of different weed management tactics to see how do we put these together in a package to manage weeds in this crop.
Which is a whole lot different than managing weeds in soybeans, really.
Even though edamame is Glycinia max, the same species as soybean, because of the time of harvest and how that crop is used, it's treated differently by EPA for herbicide registration, so it's not actually what's registered for use on soybean is not registered on edamame. It's actually more in a crop group that includes things like green beans and snow peas and crops like that.
It means a path is already in place for the production and human consumption safe management of edamame. It's just a matter of companies in the United States deciding to contract grow and harvest the green soybean. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Support for WILL is provided by Risk Management Commodities, presenting a winter planning meeting at Hog Heaven Barbecue in Mount Carmel, Illinois at noon on Monday, January 13th. Lunch will be served. RSVP to 866-837-9027. Support comes from Country Financial. Country Financial is hosting farm information sessions throughout Illinois from December to March. Topics include updates to the federal crop insurance program, the Farm Bill, and how to use grain marketing and crop insurance together to manage risk. Registration information is on their crop update website at countrycrop.com/update.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from the University of Illinois. On the phone line with us this afternoon to take a look at the cash grain market, Matt Bennett at TGM. He's in Windsor, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Matt.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, producers finally getting out of the cold, I suppose. Have they decided to move any grain?
Well, you know, there's not a whole lot of grain out in the countryside moving. A little bit of guys selling maybe stuff out of the elevator, but there's really not a whole lot. We are picking up off of one farm, but it's awfully tough to get out in the country right now still.
Waiting for tomorrow morning's 11 o'clock release central time of the USDA report, I suppose.
Yeah, a lot of guys are talking about that and these beautiful corn markets we've had the last couple of days, and I think they're kind of hanging their heads just a little bit, hoping that we don't extend the move downwards even farther tomorrow, but you know, right now it's kind of rough.
Yeah, expectations of your own tomorrow?
Oh, my expectations are, my usage expectations had been really positive, but here the last couple of weeks our export numbers haven't been so hot, and, you know, it's going to be kind of interesting to see what we do. I think the ethanol numbers will come out fairly strong, and exports should be revised a little higher, but, boy, I don't know, production could climb a little bit more than usage at this point.
And your bids for the day?
Yeah, my corn bid would be 4 for cash, 416 for next fall, 1285 on the cash beans, and 1070 for next fall.
Hey, thanks so much.
Hey, thanks, Tom.
That is Matt Bennett. He's at TGM in Windsor, Illinois. Joins us on this Friday afternoon, or rather Thursday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report. Back in a couple minutes, we'll talk with T-Storm Weather's Mike Tenora.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
It's National Apricot Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1788, Connecticut became the fifth state in the Union. The tiny state suffered under the Articles of Confederation. Faced with heavy import duties to New York, Connecticut found it difficult to rebuild its economy after the war. In 1843, William Headley died, an English coal mine manager. He was a pioneer in the building and design of steam locomotives that featured simple friction between wheels and rails instead of geared track. He patented his idea on March 13th of 1813, and later that year, his locomotive, Puffing Billy, began to pull coal on a 5-mile line. The engine remained in service till 1864. In 1858, Elizabeth Gertrude Knight Britton was born, an American botanist. Her efforts were a major factor in the establishment of the New York Botanical Gardens. In 1914, Henry Ford established the unheard-of sum of $5 a day minimum wage in his factories. The wage at the time was just $2.34 for a 9-hour shift. Ford not only doubled the wage, he cut an hour off the workday. And in 1992, Hans Jenny died, a Swiss agricultural chemist. He developed numerical functions to describe soil in terms of 5 interacting factors: climate, organisms, relief, parent material, and time. His book, Factors of Soil Formation, published in 1941, is a classic. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. On the phone line, Mike Tenor at T-Storm Weather for this Thursday afternoon. He's in Chicago. Mike, thanks for being with us. Well, we came out of the cold. Looks like we're going to get a bit more heat over the next several days. Can you tell me about that first and what problems it might create?
Yeah, well, we will be looking at temperatures that will be a lot warmer than they have been lately. We'll see maximums into the 30s and 40s even across a large part of the central U.S. That will include Illinois. The only reason, though, that we're not super excited about turning a whole lot warmer than, say, 40 degrees is simply because we have too much snowpack on the ground. When you have a lot of snow on the ground, all of that warm weather is essentially wasted melting away snow, and when you melt away the snow, it takes a little bit longer to warm up. So once the snowpack is gone, that's when we'll start to see temperatures warm even more. But generally, we'll be looking at temperatures a little bit warmer than average over the next 7 to 10 days, with highs generally between about 30 and 40, depending on the day of the week.
Are you expecting a rain event with this next set of weather that's coming through?
Yeah, well, we are looking at a fairly significant rain event across a large part of the Corn Belt, including Illinois, and that begins tomorrow afternoon, and then it ends sometime tomorrow night. Interestingly enough, there is a decent probability for a few thunderstorms across the region, including central Illinois and points on to the south. Now, we're not looking for anything in the way of severe weather, but we're just looking at some of the parameters here, and you can easily see that some fairly significant rainfall is on the way. It looks like most areas should see around 1 inch of rain. When you combine 1 inch of rain with melting of snow, that could lead to a little bit of flooding in different areas, including some of the riverways. So that'll be something to monitor. But once the system exits tomorrow night, we're not looking for too much in the way of rain any or snow any time after that.
How far along will it bring us in alleviating some of the dry conditions people have been discussing in the background in the Midwest?
Well, if you look at rainfall over the last 6 months, there is a very large dry pocket, essentially centered on Iowa, then on through Illinois, and including parts of Missouri, Wisconsin, and Minnesota. That is a significant issue potentially, but only if we don't see good rains prior to spring. And this event here is going to be one event that at least helps out a little bit, though you could argue that the soils are frozen, so the overall benefit of upcoming rainfall will be limited. But, you know, it's something that we do need to follow. But it doesn't seem like we're in a very dry pattern at the moment. We do seem to be getting rain every once in a while, some snow. It's not like we're not seeing anything out there. So at this point, our overall concern is low, but, you know, there's not much we can do about it at this point because it already happened. A lot of the dryness is simply because of what happened back in July and August.
Your take on weather in South America?
Well, it's too dry in the south of Argentina. That's a bit of an issue for Buenos Aires, where a lot of corn and soybean production occurs in that province, around one-third of it. So that'll be something to watch. But the central areas are getting some decent rainfall today and into tonight. It turns a lot drier after that for about 1 week. So Argentina is always this issue that they seem to be getting a little too dry and then they get some rain. But the south of Argentina is definitely too dry. Parts of Brazil could use some rain too, but other areas are receiving significant rainfall. So Brazil is kind of in the middle, with no areas looking great, but no areas looking too bad, except for arguably parts of southeast and northeast Brazil.
Mike Tenores with T-Storm Weather in Chicago, and that wraps up this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report.